How much is $20 million? How about $10 million or even $1 million? If you're like me, that's F-U-N money, as in fun money. It's take 10 trips around the world in a private jet money. It's tell your boss he has bad breath money or home theater that's better than the real theater money. Ohio Lottery jackpot games like Mega Millions, Powerball, and Classic Lotto all give you a chance at real fun money. So play an Ohio Lottery jackpot game today. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Please play responsibly.
New to Medicare? Go to MyHealthPolicy.com. With MyHealthPolicy.com, you can compare plans from some of the nation's top insurers. Start now to find a plan and apply online. MyHealthPolicy.com makes it easy to find a Medicare Advantage plan in your area, including plans for $0 a month in plan premiums, low out-of-pocket costs, and expansive provider networks.
My decision, my Medicare. MyHealthPolicy.com.
It's the mighty Judas Priest right here on your Classic Metal Show with Desert Plains. That one going out to Dan, hanging out with our good friend Sal tonight.
Oh yeah, what are they? Where are they at? Just at home?
Just at his house. Sal's got a married friend, Dan, and okay. He got a get out of prison card tonight.
To be able
to hang out with his guy friends and.
Whose man cave are they hanging out in?
They're hanging out with Sal.
Sal's man cave?
Yeah.
Guys, look at this. That paneling, that's 100% oak in the basement here. Look at that. Look, I even have a bar down here and a Budweiser sign or a St. Pauli girl. I know some of you guys, your women wouldn't let you have something like that, but my wife's cool. She lets me have St. Pauli girl sign.
Yeah. Yeah, Sal wouldn't put up with that nonsense. Sal's an out and about guy. He doesn't answer to no chick.
Please, is he married?
Mm-mm.
Oh, in that case, yeah.
No.
Yeah, that's right. He's done with his fucking cunt.
Yeah. So his friend wanted to live the single life and live it up like a single guy, happening guy about town.
It's what, 10:30 now, your time?
Yeah, it's 20 of 11, yeah.
And his friend's a married friend?
Yeah.
His friend went home 30 minutes ago. You know, this has been fun, but I really got to
get
home.
Yeah, I got to go. She gave me a 10 o'clock curfew.
She said she'd be mad if I wasn't home by 11.
What were you doing out so late?
Why do you have to be out with your single friends? Am I not good enough?
What can you do at Sal's place that you can't do here at home where I can keep an eye on you?
I could talk to you, too. What? You married me. Why can't we spend time together? You want to get away.
Yeah.
How dare you?
What are you guys going to be doing over there? Because I know that Sal, I don't trust him at all.
You guys are just getting whores over there, aren't you? That's Sal. He's a rich lawyer. He could pay for some whores, huh? Bitches are stupid.
Well, I told that story on the show before about 10 or 12 years ago where a mutual friend of ours came over to our office when I was in business with my former brother-in-law.
Sure.
And we had a poker game at our office. We played in the conference room.
Right.
And there was about six of us just playing poker, you know, smoking a few cigars. We were having some Johnny Walker Blue and having some cigars and playing poker. That's it.
Right.
And one of our mutual friends, his wife started calling about 9 o'clock.
Okay.
When are you coming home? He's like, well, we're playing poker. I told you I'd be home probably 10:30, 11. You know, it's only 9 o'clock. Do you have girls over there?
Yeah, we do. Tons of them. In fact, there's two of them licking. One is it licking each nut right now while I speak to you.
Do you have girls over there? Why is that such a worry?
Yeah, because these chicks are so fucking self-absorbed. They know that they're replaceable. That's really why it's such a worry. Because they know that that's their only value. They know it. They know that if you find another chick that will just suck your cock just that much better, they'll be on the fucking street. all the nagging they do, you know, dude, their jealousy comes around whenever they can't nag you anymore because they don't know what to do with themselves. Think about it. They get away, you get away from them, even if it's for an hour, and they don't know what to do because they're used to putting that fucking female angst into your face. And they and now all of a sudden they don't have anybody to do it to. You know, they can't really yell at the kids or anything. You know, what are they going to yell at the kids about? Do your fucking homework. Well, they do that all the time anyway. Well, now it's a Friday night and you're gone. And they're just sitting there getting more and more mad. And they just envision everything that they imagine you would do because they're such cunts. That's what it is. Because if they knew that they were treating their man like a man wants to be treated, they would have no worries about their guy going out and cheating.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's because they know that they're failures. They fail at relationships every time.
Well, this poor guy, he got off the phone with her, and 15 minutes later, quarter after 9, the phone rang again.
Of course.
And then at 9:30, she called again, and he goes, "Listen, guys, I've got to go."
Fuck that. You know what he should have done? He should have gone, all right, gone to a hotel and got a room for the night. That's what he should have done, and showed up about 11, 12 o'clock the next day.
Right.
That would have been... My ex used to try that game with me. When are you coming home? And my answer was always, by sunlight. That was... Oh, I was not going to play that game. I'll be home at sunlight.
Yeah.
That's when.
Yeah.
You know, I wasn't going to play that game. Fuck you. I'm not 10. I'm not 10 years old. And believe me, she did enough shit to fucking treat me like I was 10 years old. But that was one I wasn't going to do. If I actually did fucking claw my ass away from her, believe me, I was not coming fucking home anytime soon. Fuck that.
Hey, Alan Kill Caller, you're on the air.
Oh, I didn't mean to interrupt the Neely story there. It sounded like a pretty good story, Chris, going on about nagging and cocksucking from chicks. So please continue. Don't let me interrupt your conversation here.
Well, Bob, you're like...
Especially when it gets this good.
Well, you're like third mic anyway, so what difference does it make?
Oh, well, good, good. I'm all about nagging and cocksucking.
Mostly the cocksucking,
well,
right?
Well, Bob, you've never been married. Bob, you've never made the mistake and got married.
This is correct.
Have you come close, Bob?
Nope. Not even close.
Not even close.
You've never even been... Have you been engaged?
Nope. But, I mean, I've had... Even, like, saying, like, real long-term girlfriends? Not really.
Yeah.
I mean,
What's the longest, I
could say are real, that I was real serious about, like thinking I'm going to spend my whole... See, this is a problem. Let me tell you, Jeff.
I like this. I like Bob opening up on this subject.
You like this?
I do. This is out of your element.
The problem with most guys, what sounds like with Chris and you, Neely, when you got married, most men do it out of convenience. They just want a chick they could fuck all the time.
I don't even know if it's young, that, but go ahead.
That was me.
I think that in most cases, I mean, are they really... I mean, you have to look at it as, is this going to be a girl I'm going to spend my whole life with? Mm-hmm. Is this going to be a girl that I'm going to... If you plan on having kids, I'm going to raise kids with, you know? And I think most people just figure, well, this is convenient. I'm kind of sick of going to the bars, trying to get laid, get pussy all the time. At least I got this girl. She's hot. She's into me at the time.
Yep.
You know, they think that things aren't going to change over the years.
That was me.
And they, you know, they make the mistake of getting married way too quick. And I think women, you know, especially, as you guys know, women at our age, you date girls that have been, you know, most girls that you're going to date, even like Neely, girls that are half his age. I mean, I've dated very young girls too in their 20s, and they already have kids and they've already have the baggage, you know. So, and they're looking for a relationship, something steady, because they want, you know, basically to find a guy that could take care of them and their daughter or their son and that kind of thing. And, you know, that's just something I was never looking for. And, you know, you're lucky if you're going to find a girl that you could marry and settle down with that, you know, if you don't want kids, if you don't want the responsibility of having your own kids, it's hard to find a girl that you know, it feels the same way. And, that's kind of how... Go ahead.
So what is the longest relationship you ever had, Bob?
Kind of off and on relationships for like 2-3 years, maybe 3 years, but that's really... But, you know, all the girls I've dated, I've remained friends with. It's not like anything got ugly or got stupid, you know, and it's just kind of a mutual. It's like, hey, because I pretty much I'm honest with them. I lay it on the line, and, you know, and they know I'm not, a type of guy that's going to settle down. I don't have a lot of money. I don't, you know, as you guys know, you know, you talk about on the show, I just kind of live my life. And even though I'm 54 years old, I still don't have a permanent place to stay. I don't own a home, but I'm doing what I'm doing now, and I kind of enjoy it, and I've got the freedom to do it because I'm single and I don't have kids. And, you know, for a lot of people, that's not it. They want something stable, which is great, which is fine, and they have a 9-to-5 job, and I understand that. And if you're in a position like that, you know, where you're settled down, I can see you want to, you know, have a woman to settle down with. But, you know, it's hard to find a woman if you're, you know, planning to settle down, but who knows? Maybe eventually I'll grow up one of these days.
Yeah, well, you've had your share of skanky bitches, though, right, Bob?
I've had a few, yes. I will say I've had a few. But it's funny because I love listening to your show because I'm like, I'm kind of in between Neely and Chris. I'm actually more like Neely. I'm very hesitant when it comes to Chris. He'll fuck anything. I mean, he'll fuck a fucking blow-up doll in a second. And that disgusts me that you would go to a fucking brothel and fuck some blow-up doll that some other guys have probably come in the blow-up doll's mouth 100 times, and you're expecting that the company or the brothel is going to clean that blow-up doll and fucking sterilize it, where you're not going to be tasting somebody else's cum when you're fucking eating the pussy or the ass of that blow-up doll. I bet you guys in brothels probably fucking shit on the doll and do all sorts of crazy shit, because you got to figure, if they're going to rent a blow-up doll, they're going to rent a doll, they're going to do something that they can't do to a regular girl or something. They're going to go ballistic on this chick. And then I could just see fucking Neely coming through the brothel after. Hey, guys, pops down $500 or whatever, starts sticking his tongue in the chick's mouth, the blow-up chick's mouth, after some guy took his fucking asshole and rubbed it all over her face. Anyway.
Yeah.
I heard the follow-up Eric Braverman call. I'm sorry, guys.
Well, Bob, I think this is the most raw I've ever heard from you.
Wow. Is that going to be the greatest call ever from Bob Nalbandian?
It could very well be.
Interesting. As long as it's not titled that I fucked 10-year-old boys or I gave handjobs.
Well, you can blame Chris for that headline.
Hey, it's all good.
I wasn't cutting up the show at that time, so Chris was 100% responsible for that.
Well, you know, you hurt my feelings, Chris. You fucking ruined my life, and I'm hurt. You know, don't worry. I'm a grown man. I could handle it. It's all in good fun, and I'm still all about that. You know, thick sense of humor, fucking with people. Fuck what people think about their feelings. About if it's a joke, it's a joke. You know, and I could get a good joke, even if it's on me.
Sure.
So, Bob, we did, what, an extra hour and a half of the Classic Metal Show, but we titled it Skull Sessions the other day?
Yes, it basically was like an episode of the Classic Metal Show, and it was something, I've always intrigued. I don't think we've ever spoke about it before on your show. I know you've talked about it many times about promoters, and it was always something like, fuck, I should call in and kind of, you know, talk to them about it. But, you know, you guys would go off on your thing about it, so I figured, you know, I'll get you on on the Skull Sessions, and we could talk about it. And, you know, the timing was good with, you know, of course, with Live Nation and the thing with Metallica coming out. And, you know, of course, they end up getting the brunt of the shit about it just because, you know, like we talked about in the episode, they become the scapegoat band that, you know, people could easily shit on. And, I thought it was a topic, you know, I talked to Matt, and he was all for doing it. We had, we were supposed to get a band that was supposed to come in that weekend, and they couldn't do it. So I said, let's hit our go-to guys, Chris and Neely, and we'll whip something else. And it came out good. It came out quite good.
Yeah,
although
I said I thought it came out really good.
Yeah. It's just got posted today. If anyone is interested, shockwaveskullsessions.com, or it's on Spreaker and iHeart and, you know, all the other outlets out there, Spotify. But yeah, I thought it was good. I mean, that was a great conversation. And of course, you guys always add interesting, you know, conversation, that topic. And I know you've, got a lot of experience, a lot of things to say, and, you know, what, Neely added to, the VIP packages and all that. It's, you know, a lot of outsiders, they don't see, this kind of thing. You know, they just see the bands coming into town and they want to see the show and they buy the tickets.
No. Dude, you know, not to move off of Skull Sessions, but I was curious if you saw this today, because I know it's all people that we all know. Did you see that our friend Leather Leone signed with Michael Brambold?
What do you mean signed with?
Signed to have him do all her marketing.
Oh,
yeah.
I didn't know that. I know Michael's a Bay Area guy. And yeah. He works with a lot of Bay Area people, so it doesn't surprise me. And that guy's good. He's a solid, you know, whatever people may think of Michael and his Three Sides of the Coin podcast. And you know, a lot of it is in good fun too. He's very sarcastic, and when it comes to his kind of sense of humor and stuff, and he likes to, you know, piss people off about his Kiss shit, you know, and his, you know, I could give a fuck about Kiss, but. He's a good marketer, and he's got a lot of experience. So good for Leather. I hope she does well. She's a really cool chick. She's going to be in our documentary too. You know, Danny Shipman did an interview with her, so we used some segments of that interview.
Yeah, I think she's in the trailer.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. We did. That's true. Good eye, Neely. Good eye for the queer guy.
Well, we tried to do a CMS TV thing with Leather, but apparently she decided to do it while she was running around her house or something, and we couldn't keep her on camera. She literally was not on camera like 80% of the video.
Well, I listened to the segment you did about vocalists, which was cool.
Yeah, that was it. There's actually video of it, but most of it is just of her couch, because she would not stay on video for any of it.
Yeah, she's kind of hyper. I noticed that about when Danny interviewed her, too. She was kind of all over the place, yeah, I could see that.
Well, Bob, I know that, last time you were on the show, or at least when we were talking on your Skull Sessions, you talked about the next episode of the Inside Metal series. So when is the Bay Area Thrash Metal proposed? When do you think that's going to be available, or when you're going to do some screenings?
I think we're going to try to do it in November. We'll probably have it done. Danny is kind of on the finishing stages now of the editing. We added in the narration. So it's really just a matter of, you know, putting in the music and the all the footage, the, you know, concert footage and photos, and then do the color correction and some of the audio equalization and that kind of stuff. So I assume we'll get it done in the next month or two, but it'll likely come out the beginning of the new year, because, you know, when it comes to releasing movies, DVDs or digital, both really, it's even more so than releasing music. It's, you know, doing it toward the end of the year is a very difficult and competitive time, you know, due to the holidays and all that. So, we'll probably put it out the beginning of the new year, which will be great, because it would coincide with NAMM again. And, you know, as you know, Neely, we did same thing as what we did with Band vs. Brand. We put that out in January, and we did the screening at NAMM. So we may do a screening at NAMM, but we're going to do a special, obviously, a screening here in San Francisco, probably at the Roxy Theater. I looked into that, and you know, that's not solidified yet, but we're probably looking in maybe November. I would think so. It'd be before, you know, we'll make it long enough, you know, but before the holidays, the Thanksgiving holidays. So I'm thinking probably early to November, I'm hoping. You know, we just got to make sure everything is right and we got it all, you know, situated first, which I think we will, you know, like I said, within the next 2 months for sure. So I'll let you know as soon as we get it posted. I'll let all the CMS fans know, you know, anyone in the Bay Area that wants to come out, you know, well, if you're a CMS fan, you could come out to the screening for free. How's that?
Very good. Well, you know, these things, I know that you guys work on kind of a tight budget, and, you know, the end result is always, you know, stellar. And it takes a while to, you know, to sift through all the footage and, you know, do crop out whatever pieces of the interviews that you want to do and whatnot to assemble this thing. So I noticed that on Amazon Prime that I think all of the Inside Metals that have been released are on there, because they keep popping up in my suggested list. So how is that doing for you as far as the previous releases?
The Inside Metal movies in particular, they do really well on Amazon.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny because Amazon is definitely, you know, we don't have it on Netflix. We have it on pretty much a lot of the other. It originally started doing well on iTunes. But now I guess nobody cares about iTunes. I guess it's not even called iTunes. It's just all Apple Music. I mean, they still have the iTunes, and I think our stuff is still available on there, but that dropped tremendously. And you would think Google Play, being Google, would be a big thing, but not too many people that I know watch Google Play, and I don't think our numbers are very good on Google Play. So Amazon's been the go-to, and particularly because it's free on Amazon if you're a member, so...
Now, how does that work for you, though? Do you get paid per play, though? I mean,
I don't know. I mean, I know it's minimal pay. You know, what we did, I think, with the first, with the Pioneers of L.A., Hard Rock and Metal, we did it where it was like, what was it, $3, $2.99, $3.99. Yeah,
right.
Even if you're a Prime member. So they paid on top of it, and that did well. And that's good. The problem is there's so many movies, particularly documentaries, coming out, you know, indie documentaries on the music scene. And I've even noticed, like, the Slash movie that came out for a while. Now that's free on Amazon.
Yeah.
They were charging, like, $3.99. I put it in my keck, and I was, you know, not that, you know, I wasn't just ready to watch it. I would have paid the $3, and it's like, oh, shit, now this is for free, too. And I think a lot of them are going for free because it's just the demand, because everyone else, all these smaller movies, are offering their shit for free, and I think people are going, well, fuck, man, I'm not going to pay for it. I'll just wait till it gets free, or I'll just watch something else for free. So that's kind of been, I think, the case with it. But, yeah, I mean, you obviously still get a cut for any of the streaming, even if it's free. I'm sure it's a much smaller cut. I don't do the business. That all goes through Metal Rock Films with Warren Croyle on that. And I know Band vs. Brand, that did okay. It did, you know, I think the thing with Inside Metal is we kind of built a steady, you know, reputation with the titles. So people are familiar with the Inside Metal titles, sure, a little bit more. So, it does well. I mean, I'm not complaining. It's all good. And, you know, as long as people see it and, you know, dig it and whatever, that's all I really care about.
Let's get to the important question, Bob. How many times am I featured in this video?
Actually, if you didn't cut yourself off on the interview the other day, or the skull sessions, after we did the skull sessions, Neely and I were talking, and I was telling Neely that you've got a lot of footage in this, you know, quite a bit of footage in this one.
Nice.
As opposed to Neely this time, because the Neely interview we did real short. You might have remembered.
Yeah, it was only five, eight minutes at the most.
Yeah, we weren't really set up to do a full. We did that. That was done off the iPhone, but that came out good. You know, we got a couple quotes of Neely in there, but I think we probably got about close to you know, 9 or 10 quotes from you, Chris, in there. So.
Look at that. Nine or ten.
You won't be disappointed.
Yeah, you'll be dominating it just like I did on the band versus brand.
All right, that's it. I'm gonna buy my plane ticket or start my savings account for my plane ticket now.
All right.
Since I'm the star of the movie and all, I might as well be there.
Well, you know, seeing that you lived in the Bay Area during that time and you made a lot of comments pertaining to the late 80s, particularly. I mean, most of the documentary focuses obviously on the early 80s, and we even go back to the late 70s with Ryan T. You know, kind of like the other LA, Inside LA metal movies, we kind of start from the 70s era, from, you know, the Ryan T's and all that, and kind of work our way up. But you, you there was a lot of great topics that you discussed in there. So you will be covered extensively, Mr. Aiken.
Dude, what's crazy is, didn't I shoot that stuff like 2 years ago or 3 years ago now?
It was a while ago, yeah. We kind of stalled on this one. We were planning to put it out sooner, but, you know, I got involved with, you know, a lot of other stuff in the Bamberg brand and whatever, and we figured, you know, let's give the Rise of LA Metal a chance to, because that one kind of took a while to let it roll, and they, for whatever reason, they, you know, we do them in two volumes, a part one and part two, and they separated the part two, and it came out like 3 months later or something, so we're like, well, let's let that get a chance to, you know,
yeah, let's let that breathe like a fine wine, right, Bob?
That's right. Speaking of which, I'm drinking my $2 Chuck fine wine, which is now more than $2. But anyway, that's a whole other topic.
Well, Bob, I want to ask you your opinion. I don't know if you have an opinion or not on, since we were talking about Amazon
Prime. I have an asshole, so I obviously have an opinion.
Well, you mentioned Amazon Prime and, you know, the fact that there are a lot of documentaries out there, you know, music-based. Have you watched any of those Albums Under Review documentaries where they take a classic album, let's just say like AC/DC Back in Black or Def Leppard's Pyromania, and they break it down and they basically take it apart track by track, or say just the guitar part or just the vocals only?
Oh, the classic album.
Yeah.
Classic albums.
Yeah.
I actually bought, you know, before they were streaming, I bought a lot of them, and I believe Chipster used to, because it was, it's now Universal, but it was, who is Spitfire? They used to be Spitfire years ago, and then they changed to,
Eagle Rock?
What's the company?
Eagle Rock.
Eagle Rock, and now Eagle Vision. Yeah, they're all Eagle Vision, yeah. And I remember having the British Steel and the Number of the Beast. I love those. I mean, those are really well done. Those were one of the originals. They were done back in the 90s, I think, a lot of them. And they do, you know, everything from classic rock to metal. The Ace of Spades is a great one. You can watch it. They'll play them on Access.
Well, your buddy Nick Wall does a lot of the commentary on a lot of them.
Yeah, Mick Wall, or
yeah, Mick Wall.
Malcolm Dome,
okay. I think. Mick Dome, maybe.
Malcolm Dome.
Malcolm Dome.
I've interviewed them both, but yeah, Malcolm is like, as far as the British journalists, he's like the most prominent when it comes to documentary movies. And, you know, he knows his history. He's a smart motherfucker. And we've had him, obviously, on the Inside Metal movies, the L.A., once. I don't believe he's on this Bay Area ones. I don't think he made any comments about the Bay Area, but I think he was on all three of the Inside Metal LA movies.
Well, apparently, his appearances on your documentaries didn't pay enough to help him fix all those teeth.
I knew that was coming. Well, I think at this point he probably doesn't give a fuck.
Well, I wouldn't think so.
I mean, I think if he was going to get it done, he probably would have done it in his late teens, you would expect. But I actually met him in L.A. when I was working Roadrunner. So this would have been early 90s. And he came into town and we went to, believe it or not, he had to review a show by the band LAPD, who Chris would probably remember, turned into Korn, or was Korn without
Korn,
the
right.
singer, without Jonathan, yeah. And they were like a punk band on Triple X, and apparently Roadrunner in Europe, they distributed all the, they released all the Triple X records for Europe, so he was there to review them at the country club, and we hung out there, and then, you know, we met up with John Bush and did some drinking. That he's a fun dude to hang out with. Went to the Rainbow with him. Yeah, he's a crazy fucker, dude. That guy can drink, I'll tell you. Well, all those Brits could drink, you know.
See, this is why you didn't get yourself tied down, because you couldn't be going out drinking with John Bush and Malcolm Dome and hanging out with these filthy rock bands with slutty chicks and all that.
That's right, Neely. What were you thinking getting married so young?
Neely? I don't know what I was thinking.
Jesus.
I was stupid. I'll be the first one to admit. My wife's tits were perfect, and her ass was perfect, and her pussy felt good. And that was enough for me to say, here's a ring.
Well, you know what? I think in your case, Aiken, even though I know things didn't work well at all with your wife in the long run, but probably saved your ass the way that you were fucking hookers left and right. I think your cock would have fell off by now, dude.
I probably would have done.
You got lucky. When you talk about not getting any diseases or not knocking up any chicks or anything like that and never using a condom, I'm thinking, dude, you are one lucky motherfucker. Because I remember during the 80s, all these rock bands, friends of mine, they had the fucking burning urine situation where they had to have the fucking Q-tip up the cock hole, and that's why I'm saying I was more like Neely. That shit scared the fuck out of me.
Yeah,
I
me too.
Away.
Me too.
You know, during the 80s when it was the prime time, I, you know, and that shit, and when the whole AIDS thing came out first, I was, you know, people think, oh, dude, you must have been fucking chicks left and right in the 80s. No, I for one, I had no game back then, and I still got no game. And for two, I was scared shitless. You know, it was a. You know,
see, Chris, Bob,
I mean,
can
friends
relate.
Of mine are going, dude, I got all these scabs on my condom.
Oh my god,
fridging going, no. Well, fuck, no, thanks.
It was, I'll tell you a real quick story. This is actually in the new book, but we used to have these, we had these women that would come and come to the barracks and wash our clothes for us. They were Koreans,
yeah,
were,
give you a haircut and a blowjob, right?
Oh, no. But
well,
you know,
was that the women in Korea, or was that Nader? I think that was Nader you were referring to. Anyway.
But no, so they would come to, you know, our rooms in the barracks, and we would have our, you know, our bed. We had like a laundry bag at the end of the bed, and they would come in and take the clothes and would wash the clothes. And a lot of the guys would not let the women wash the clothes because they had what was known as the drip. And they would get the drip all in their fucking underwear and shit. And they didn't want the Ajumas to have to deal with these fucking, you know, stained underwear that was just stained with the filth of gonorrhea or whatever.
So when were you in Korea in the military? Was that was late 80s?
That was I
early
was in 90s? Korea from I was in Korea from 87 to 89. So I was there for the Olympics. It was great. Oh my God.
Okay, we talked about that on the show. My buddy that I grew up with, he went. He was a punk and he was a crazy fucker, and saved his ass going into the Navy at the time. And he went, I believe, in like probably 82, 83, because he went straight out. You know, he was 18, 19 or whatever, and right. You know, he wasn't finishing school. He would have ended up in jail or whatnot. So he went out there and he's done really well for himself since, but he was going all over the world in the Navy, obviously, and he was fucking horse left and right, too, and I was telling them, and this was when, like, the AIDS thing were just coming about, and they were telling all the fucking guys at the time, you know, the you know, whatever, the sergeants or the captains were telling them, hey, you know, these chicks, we don't know about them, because they were going through Africa and going through all over the Asia and all this stuff, and they're like, wear a condom. And he said he was smart enough to wear a condom, where all these other guys, they said, fuck that, you know, because they're going, you know, there's this disease going around, it's real serious, you know. And it was just around you know, this might have been, yes, right, 81 82, so that was right probably just before the AIDS really broke out big and you know, internationally or whatever. But it was something that was going on, you know, in these countries. And he was saying, yeah, a lot of guys just didn't give a fuck, and they were, you know,
dude,
going at it with the hookers.
Well, we were aware of AIDS, but it was always like, so it was considered like if you fucked really dirty girls and you just kind of looked at the girls and you're like, well, she looks pretty clean. And that was the fucking criteria. And I know that that's a horrible, horrible way to do it. And I don't think I would be that way, but I mean, dude, back then, you know, I mean, my job was to get shot if somebody shot at a fucking general. That was my job. So being afraid for my life, especially from pussy, fuck no, I had no fear. And, you know.
Well, you were fucking pussy, right? You weren't doing anal sex at that point. No. And now, although back then you didn't know what, you know, what it was from, but I think now it's pretty much, you know, they pretty much said you can't get AIDS from, you know, the AIDS virus does not live in the pussies. So.
Well,
that's
dude,
what a lot of people I know have been.
This is so bad because it's such a fucking falsehood. But because I wanted to fuck Korean whores, it's why I believed this. But when you went there, the place in Itaewon, which I think you've probably been to Itaewon, or I would imagine because you've been there.
No, I've only been to Seoul and one on the other coast, Busan.
It was south of Seoul, going to, it was right next to the military base, right there on Yongsan. It's called Itaewon.
Okay.
And when you would pick up a chick on Hooker Hill, she would take you back to her place, and this is so stupid, I can't even believe I'm gonna admit this, but I'm gonna admit this. They would take you back in the room, and they would have you take off your clothes, and they would take off their clothes, and then they would bring in like a bowl with warm water and a washcloth. And before they would do anything, they would give your balls and dick a good washing.
That's what the brothels did in outside of Vegas, too.
Exactly.
They would take you in a room and wash your cock.
In my 18-year-old stupid head, I was like, well, see how clean they are? This is why I won't get a disease, because they're so clean. So stupid.
Yeah, they're washing my balls, man. They must be disease-free.
Yeah,
hey, as long as you wash my balls, I'll fuck you.
She was giving me a good one. So, but, dude, honestly, the fucking I don't think was the most dangerous. The most dangerous to me was the barber shops. Because you go in a barber shop, you get your hair cut, and then she'd push the chair back and suck your cock for like 10 extra bucks. And it was like, you know, there was not so much as even a thought of that. Did she even have mouthwash or gum in her mouth to keep her mouth clean from the last haircut? It was just sit down, haircut, dick sucking, out. Give her $11.
Yeah, she probably had her tongue in some other... The previous guy's asshole just before she was sucking your cock.
She probably lubed my dick with the last guy's cum. I know it. I don't care because I know this. I know for a fact because I did it. It was not a thing where once you got close to cum and they would pull it off and just jerk you off. They would take the fucking load in their mouth. And I was such a fucking, I don't know, idiot or 18-year-old or stupid, or I just wanted to cum so bad. That fucking, I was just fine with that. I never thought, well, there must have been somebody in here before me. I never once thought that ever.
Just the same way you would go to a brothel and fuck a love doll and thinking no one else has fucked this doll before me.
Well, dude, I'm gonna be honest. I mean, the brothel thing is interesting, but with the price of the real dolls, I would probably just buy my own.
Ain't worth it.
There you go. I'd buy my own. $5,000? $5,000, and I know that I'm the only one that's fouled it, and I can buy a bottle washer to clean it.
So you could train it to wash your balls just to make sure that it's disease free.
Yeah, what are you doing, Chris? Yeah, I'm washing my girl's pussy.
I could just see somebody coming over me going, "Don't go in the dishwasher." Cause I got the pussy in the top rack.
It'll be like the Archer episode. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Katya. The pussy in the bathroom sink.
Yeah. So funny.
Love it.
Don't forget your pussy when you leave. But you know what? Sooner or later, they probably will have dolls like that. That'll be like human. Just have a pussy, an interchangeable pussy.
Well, they do have that now,
Bob. Probably dudes would... Yeah, see, but they're not like Katya.
No, they're not like Katya. Know. They don't walk and talk and move,
but they actually have interchangeable.
Yeah, cookies. Because we read a story. What was it about a month ago, Chris? Where this lady, she's so interested in opening up her brothels with these love dolls that these new models, they basically switch out the pussies now.
Wow, why clean them when you could just switch them out, right?
Or just put the other one in,
like you say, in the dishwasher. I wonder if they have their own like dishwasher, just a pussy washer, and there, you know, it's like a machine that just cleanses the pussy.
Right.
You never know.
I would imagine if these things take off in sales, you'll have all that stuff. You'll definitely have cleaning, just like guns. You know how guns have cleaning kits, maintenance kits. You'll have a doll cleaning.
Yeah,
kit.
You'll have a vag wash.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, just imagine going to your JCPenney's, checking out the different pussy washing machines they got. You're here for a washing machine? No, a pussy washing machine. Oh, here's our latest model right here. It's on sale.
Let me try the Scope-a-Dope mouthwash.
Too funny.
Nice.
Well, on a different note, Bob, I'm sure you're well aware that former London guitarist Lizzie Gray passed away this week. Did you have any interaction with him at any point?
Yeah, well, he was in our Inside Metal movie, and both the Pioneers and the second one, LA Metal Scene Explodes. We didn't get him in person, and we couldn't film him because I thought it was Parkinson's, but I guess it was a similar disease to Parkinson's.
It was MS, wasn't it?
And I guess he was some kind. Yeah, it was a specific disease. I think it was. Yeah, it was very similar to either MS or Parkinson's. But he was shaking a lot, so we just did an audio segment. And I spoke with him on the phone a couple times, and I was introduced to him through Tim Yasui and. And also, I believe Nader, too, who obviously was very close with him. A wonderful guy, great guy. And, it is sad because, people like Lizzie, you could say whatever you want about him or the early London. And, obviously he never made, his mark on the scene with London or Spiders. Spiders and Snakes, they were, independent at best. They never... but he was really a true pioneer, a real legend to the LA scene. I mean, you look at all the people that he basically helped groom, and from the guys in Guns N' Roses, Slash, to Blackie Lawless, to obviously Mickey Six, to so many different artists have went through LA Guns. The original version with Lizzie Gray, and it is sad, man. It's always sad to see people from that era ago, especially such a cool guy and such a guy that has influenced so much. I mean, London were really, everyone credits Motley Crue for starting that whole LA kind of glam thing. That look came from London. And obviously that look, they took from the 70s glam, but London was really the first LA band to really have that crop hair look and all that. And that was pretty much the brainchild of Lizzie. He was definitely, I'll go as far to say he was a legend on the Sunset Strip, it's sad, very sad. And the same way with Willie Bass has been around for so long, and he's just Slash, and so many people were in Black Sheep. People don't realize that. Willie was playing with, Buddy Miles and Billy Cox from Hendrix. I mean, he played with all sorts of cats back in the late 70s and stuff. And, he was a pioneer on the LA scene, too, with Black Sheep and Paul Gilbert. I saw Black Sheep, God, probably in 84 with Paul Gilbert when, nobody knew who he was. He was a 17-year-old kid from GIT and, just shredding, and it was like, God damn, this band is good, it's sad, man. It's especially when these people never, that work so hard and still work, Lizzie would still do jam, he'd still go out jamming whenever he could, in Vegas. He was living in Vegas, and he, they lived and breathed rock and roll, even though they never, made, success, financially speaking, or hitting the big time, Nikki Sixx and all these other people. But I'm sure Lizzie got. I think it was the only the one song that he co-wrote with Motley Crue.
Motley,
Public Enemy number one. Yeah,
right.
Yeah. So you know, hopefully they didn't screw him out of royalties there. But I think he got his cut there. So I'm.
If they were going to screw him out of it, they wouldn't have given him the credit. So,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
But
well, even I know some bands, even though Sharon Osbourne has done that, even though credit's been given to some of these artists, you know, like Jakey Lee and whatnot. But yeah.
Well, dude, we had Lizzie on our show one time that I remember, and I think it was the only time. And it was a decent interview, but it was the most awkward interview I think we've ever had, because he kept and honestly, it's two guys that did this, but Lizzie's was the most awkward, followed closely by Sean Peck from Cage.
Right.
Every time he referred to himself, he referred
to
himself
in third person.
Yeah. And it was such an odd thing. He's like, well, with Spiders and Snakes, Lizzie Gray played the lead guitar. And it's like, dude, you are Lizzie Gray.
Wasn't that a Nikki Sixx thing? Wasn't that something that Nikki Sixx invented?
I don't know, to be honest with you, but it was a really oddball thing.
He
for
always
him to
referred
do.
To himself in the third person, too. Nikki Sixx has just died. You know, all dramatically. And the VH1 behind the scene music goes, Nikki, this guy has just killed Nikki Sixx. But yeah, I know a lot of people do that. I don't know why. I think it sounds stupid. You know, it's like, dude, you are him. You know. I mean, I could see. I mean, Alice Cooper used to kind of do it, because he used to kind of separate Alice Cooper, the performer, from, you know, Alice, the regular guy that goes out golfing kind of thing. That was kind of his shtick, you know, back then. It was like a split personality thing. So he was doing that back in the 70s, you know, pretending like it was his alter ego thing. But yeah, you know, I don't know, but maybe it makes him sound cooler. Who knows?
Well, Bob, during the Skull Sessions, the latest release with Chris and myself, when Chris and Neely does Skull Sessions, we really bring it, but
Chris and Neely really bring it.
But strangely enough, at the beginning of the Skull Sessions, you were mentioning Randy O, formerly of Odin. And then today I get a press release from Nancy B. Sale saying that Randy O is going to release a new solo record.
Oh, wow.
Were you aware of this?
I know he was still doing stuff. You know, I talk to Jeff every so often, and Sean, whenever I see him, usually I'll see them, run into them at NAMM. And they'll do like an Odin reunion here and there just for fun. But apparently Randy's, I don't know what he's doing, but he's done really well for himself. And I don't believe he's involved. I mean, I think he still does music for fun on the side, but he's got like a high-paying regular job, so he does okay apparently. But I wasn't aware that he's actually coming out with a solo record.
Yeah, he's got a new record.
Something I'm not. Go ahead.
Yeah, he's got a new record. The name of the CD is called "Coming Home" on Down Boys Music. To be released.
Wasn't that a Janie Lee?
Well, I don't know if that's if that has anything to do with Eric Turner or anything like that. But Down Boys Music. And it's going to be released on September 11th, strangely enough. And they're going to have a record release party at the Rainbow Bar and Grill.
Is that because listening to it makes you want to smash your head into a building?
Jesus. Yeah, some people, I guess they never give up. But, hey, good for him. Let him, you know, maybe he could continue his jacuzzi interview with Penelope Spheres and talk about,
I'll tell you this much.
2019 Neely, version of it.
Neely, you'll be doing that interview.
Just make sure it's done in a jacuzzi.
God, Odin sucked. Odin was terrible.
I never liked that band. I never liked Randy, and he, you know, back in the day in the 80s, he had the biggest attitude as well, and he just thought he was. I mean, you could just tell by seeing the footage of him. He just totally thought he was like this big rock star, wanted to be treated as such. And I think that's one of the reasons. I mean, John Bush has joked in, I don't think we actually did use the footage in one of the episodes of, I think it was L.A. Metal Scene Explodes, or one of the Inside Metal episodes. He's joking about, at the time, every band from L.A. was getting signed. Everyone got signed. He's naming bands, you know, Warren, Black and Blue, Wasp, you know, Warrior, Malice. He goes, everybody but Odin. Sorry, Jeff. but it's true. They were the only band. I mean, they had their deal. They put on their own label through Green World, that EP, and then they did a second one with Gypsy, but I think that was all independent. But they never got the major label that they kept saying, you know, and they kept saying how they got the biggest bidding war and this and that, and it never happened for them. So, and it's no surprise why.
Right.
Hey, Bob, they were not a good. He was not a good singer. But, you know, he was just like Axl Rose and every other singer at that time, doing that wannabe Axl Rose shit, you know?
Right. Bob, I'm curious what you think. I know you know, and the fans certainly know, and Neely, you know this too. I'm really riding the dick of this Dirty Honey band right now, and I'm curious what you think. I think they are the first band in probably 20, maybe even longer years, that is having like mainstream radio success and real mainstream, you know, success without any sort of record company involvement at all. Is can you think of anybody else?
I had no idea about this. I mean, I remember you mentioned them on the Skull Session, but I rarely listen to regular radio, and I'm as you know, in the Bay Area now, I haven't heard them, or I wasn't aware that they were even. The only reason I was aware of them was from you, and then Matt said sure. He was kind of familiar with them, and through your posts. But right. You know, as you said, Miles Kennedy is buddies with them, and I know, you know, Slash and you know, Miles, they've got a big thing going. I guess Alter Bridge now is kind of, you know, made its mark, so I'm sure Miles has a lot to do with it. But no, I wasn't aware. But you know, good for them. I mean, it's good. You know, it's great to see this kind of music is starting to make some waves, and it's actually getting on like major commercial radio stations. Is that what you're saying?
When I'm Gone is top 10. Is top 10 on Billboard?
No shit.
Yeah.
Well, nowadays, like you say, you don't need a major labels. If you got, you know, like a major publicist or someone that could do the work that, you know, the labels used to do, you know, or have the connections with the major radio stations and the major press people, that being, you know, the Rolling Stones and whatever, and all the major website kind of things, you know, that's really what it takes. I mean, it's, you know, these publicists are expensive, but, you know, if you're looking to break, sometimes it's worth it. I mean, when we had, I know you've worked with different publicists, Metal Maria and different people like that, and we did as well with, you know, a couple of the Inside Metal titles, and sometimes it could get into avenues that, you know, you can't get into. So, you know, I'm sure they probably got a real good publicist, and they probably got some finance behind them, and they, you know, which is smart, they put it out on their own label. And,
I know is they're doing something that nobody else is doing for some reason, just because the tours that they're getting, they're toured with Guns N' Roses, they're touring with Slash, they're touring with Alter Bridge, they did some dates with The Who, and the hot rumor is that they're going to have the winter tour with Aerosmith. And I'm like, when has that happened for a completely unsigned band? I can't remember another unsigned band in my life that has had that kind of, you know, attention given to them.
Yeah, I, you know, to be honest, I really don't know anything about the band, so I can't really comment. But I don't know. I mean, the closest I know was the Struts, but I believe I don't know who they're signed with, but I believe they were with a major. But I know they were touring with the Rolling Stones and stuff soon after. I saw them at the Troubadour at their very, very first show, long before Eddie Trunk saw them. I just watched them. And I thought they were fantastic live. I mean, that singer was just, you know, I mean, he had that charisma of those 70s guys. Their music was not really my cup of tea. I mean, although they were good, they had that very much that 70s, old school glam 70s sound. But,
Were there bands, and this is where I don't remember because I was young. I was a little younger because I'm younger than you guys. But in the when the LA, you know, hair metal, I'll say hair metal, but whatever you want to call it, when that scene exploded, were there bands that were getting, you know, to the next level without labels or you know, the only thing, I mean, I know like Poison had like Enigma, which was a tiny label.
Well, that was through Capitol. They had a shitload of money behind them. I could tell you the whole story there with Enigma because I had a band signed to Enigma Restless at the time. We were supposed to get that original Capitol distribution deal, but that basically went through Capitol. They were well owed for one. They weren't signed. They were getting, at least in L.A., they were on KNAC, and I believe even Kalawar might have been playing that song. Shining Love was kind of a, maybe it was just local, but I think it was, I mean, I know it was on like Metal Shop and all those kind of stuff. It was kind of, they had a video. The video was on MTV. There were bands that had videos out on, like MTV that were small bands, you know, unsigned bands. You know, we were joking about that band, the Snowmen, who I remember. I think that video was actually on MTV. They put on their own label, and bands like, I was just laughing at these old bands we used to see that would occasionally get on MTV that was a, that had videos out on, or that had, they were local bands. What was the band? Swift Kick. You remember Swift Kick? They had a song that had a video out. And I just remember the video. It was one of those early videos where they had like a little, a little scene before the video where they go into a record label and they kind of tell the label management to fuck off. The label's trying to tell them what they to do and not to sign the contract. I just remember that in the middle of the video, the guy jumps on the table and there's all these contracts there and he kicks the contracts into the air, and while he kicks the contract, the the logo comes out, Swift Kick. And I just thought, well, I was so stupid, but kind of clever to say, wait, because at least that way you were, oh, that's the name of the band. It's kind of your marketing thing, but I just think how stupid. He kicks the contracts, and it's like this logo flies through the screen, Swift Kick. But I just remember seeing that on MTV, and we're like laughing because they were a band that would play a Tuesday night at the Troubadour. So yeah, there were bands that actually had that going for them.
Right. I have one question too about Skull Sessions itself, and it absolutely.
Aldo Nova was one, but anyway.
Yeah. No. I'm moving on now, Bob. Keep up with me. I really, really, and not just saying it. I really enjoyed Matt's episode that he did without you with the guy from Reptile Records, Amphetamine Reptile.
That was fantastic.
That was great. He'll love to hear that interview. Matt did an awesome job with that one. And then I go online and I see assholes being dicks about it to him. People were like, this is okay, but where's Bob? It was like, you fucking dicks. Listen to the interview. It was clearly in his wheelhouse, and it was a great interview. It's like, why were people complaining about that?
Well, dude, I told Matt this, too, and he was a little bit concerned. I said, dude, that's the fan. I mean, it's the same thing with the CMS fans. You're going to get the, you know, I don't want to put his name out there, but of course the Nostradamus, anytime you do something that's off the track of classic metal, fuck that, Deep Purple, the fucking Night Demon, you know, if you talk about some newer metal band or, you know, grunge band or Tool or whatever, people are going to bitch when you do interviews because they're used to, I think a lot of the Skull Sessions is, you know, people think, you know, most of my stuff, I grew up with the classic metal stuff, and I purposely wanted to get Matt involved. He loves that stuff as well. You know, he's a few years younger. He's 43. He grew up in New York on the underground New York scene with a lot of those kind of noise bands and hardcore bands from New York, you know, Cro-Mags, all that kind of stuff. So he comes more from that school, and which I think is fantastic because even though a lot of the noise rock bands wasn't my cup of tea, I appreciate it. I love the independent And, you know, after hearing that interview with Tom, it's like, man, you got to have respect for that guy in the label. And there's a great documentary that Matt turned me on to that we watched about Amphetamine Reptile Records and how they survived, you know, with, you know, they had Helmet, was probably their biggest band. And,
yeah.
Well, they got the Melvins now and, you know, Unsane and a bunch of other bands. But, no, I want that. And I told Matt, you know, people are going to bitch about whatever, and that's fine. People have their opinions, and people could, you know, say what they want. It doesn't upset me, and, you know, it's, you know, it just, is what it is. People are always going
to
bitch.
I'm not going to lie, Bob. It annoyed me to no end, because I could absolutely tell, you know, I went and I saw it was out there, and I read a few of the comments. I was like, what a bunch of fucking faggots that are commenting on this, because, you know, listening to it, And you just pointed to a really interesting point that he spelled out, I thought, as good as anybody, was that whole discussion about noise and how it wasn't, you know, it wasn't even a genre at that point, and, you know, how he was talking about the difference between noise and, like, you know, like the Dillinger Escape Plan type stuff, the math metal type stuff. And, you know, how the Melvins fit into it and all that. I was like, you know, I maybe it's because I have such an interest in just the history of it, but I just thought that, you know, most people know Helmet. They know Meantime, and they know,
sure,
you know, the stuff from Betty, and, you know, they know a couple of songs anyway. And for people to just automatically be like, well, Bob's not there, so it must not be good. It's like, you guys are fucking fags, because they missed out on a hell of an interview without, I mean, it might not be, you know, classic metal per se, but I mean, it was a pretty significant chunk of hard rock history that he covered pretty in depth from that era of, like, about 89 to about 99, like that 10-year history.
Absolutely. And I'm really glad you brought that up, and I'm going to make sure Matt listens to this, because he's going to really appreciate the fact. But you know what, Chris? You have an open mind about music. You're not just into metal or classic metal. And whereas, you know, Neely, no offense, but you're kind of like me in a way. We grew up on you know, I've got more of a broader stuff into thrash, and I like, you know, a lot of grunge. And, you know, when Tool came out and all those bands, I love that shit and still do. A lot of that stuff. I know you're more, you know, but that's what makes the classic metal show work, is that you guys have a mixed, you know, views about music. I think, Chris, you're a lot more open-minded when it comes to other genres of music. I mean, you even admitted you were one of those fucking new wave fags. I mean, new wave fans. That's what that, I'm sorry, back in the day. So, which is great, which is cool. And you still, you know, say you still love all that cheesy 70s radio stuff, which I admit I do too, man. I love hearing that old stuff on the radio. I know, you know, Neely loves Chicago and that kind of stuff, which is, you know, it's good to have that. That's why I wanted Matt involved in, because I love a lot. I mean, I love the Cro-Mags. I love, you know, Suicidal, a lot of those crossover bands, you know, back when they came out, you know, in the early to mid 80s, you know, when these bands were first starting out. And I thought, wow, this is fucking great. This is a lot of energy. And same with the whole thrash metal explosion. And like I said, you know, when Soundgarden and Alice in Chains came out, I was never a fan really of Nirvana or Pearl Jam, but a lot of the other bands I really enjoyed. So, you know, there was that. That's what I want to portray. And you know what? Coming to that, I told Matt that, dude, it's not about you, Matt. And they're not bad. Don't look at it. Don't take it personal, because I got some of those emails when I did that episode, which I think was a fantastic episode. I don't think it got much love or much listens, but I had Bruce Duff and Desi Benjamin, and we talked about the alternative LA scene, because I wanted to point out that was a huge scene going on in LA. This was pre-grunge. We're talking mid-80s. There was a club called Scream, and this is like when the Jane's Addictions were starting, and you would go to these clubs. Because I knew a chick, you know, Enigma put out a lot of these bands, you know, Tex and the Horseheads and Jesus and, you know, all these, the Jesus bands, Jesus and whatever, Jesus, and all those kind of fire hose, not firehouse, but all those weird kind of bands that were coming through. And a lot of them were on Enigma. And this was probably 86, about the time we signed with them, because I was going to a lot of these shows to see some of the bands at Enigma, saying, you know, 45 Grave, all those Christian death, that kind of death rock look, you know, and right. and that was a huge scene in LA, but no one talks about it. It was going on the same time as the glam scene in Hollywood, but this was all in downtown LA and East LA, and of course the Chili Peppers, another band too that was, you know, really huge, you know, before, way before they got popular, you know, popular before the Warner Brothers days. So it was a big scene, and it was something I wanted to talk about, because although I wasn't super into that music, but I appreciated the scene because it was very independent, it was very underground, it had no radio play, and it was you know, it was a movement, and it was pre-grunge, and I think a lot of that is what exposed a lot of the grunge band. And then you had your stunt, you had, I mean, I remember very early on St. Vitus, back when I was doing Headbanger, you know, and Don Dokken actually produced one of the St. Vitus records, and they were like, as Don describes, Black Sabbath on 16, and I love that kind of stuff, you know. And I know Don did a big segment the other day, which I really appreciate. He talked about the Weasels, and of course we featured the Weasels on Inside Metal. They never got the credit for, I think they were the first crossover punk metal band that were getting radio play. They were all, you know, beat her with a rake and make her pay for her mistake. That was all over KROQ. You would never hear that today on the radio, but it was awesome because it was before Suicidal. It was like, wow, this is, it reminded me of a whole lot of Rosie kind of metal group, but with like this punk attitude and punk lyrics. And, you know, I'm thinking, wow, this is new, but they never got the credit. So I love exposing that. That's something Matt was really into too. And so, you know, Matt is a lot like you, Chris, as far as, you know, knowing about newer metal bands. And, you know, the thing about some of those noise bands, which, you know, Matt brought up with Tom, is a lot of bands like Korn and the whole new metal movement, you know, bands like Helmet and all that were before Korn. And he's saying, you listen to Helmets, the riffs, the stuff, and it's like, dude, Korn just took that and added their own kind of thing to it, which, you know, a lot of people don't really give a lot of these, you know, New York hardcore bands a credit for. Us. There were, you know, there was a huge influence. And I remember Helmet at the time. I was never a big fan of them, but I remember seeing them at the CMJ in 92. I can't remember where it was, but there was like 1,000 people there, and it was fucking nuts. And it was just, I think, when they just signed with Interscope or whatever, they had a huge deal, and, you know, it was like, wow, fuck, this band is, you know, and everyone was saying this is going to be the next big thing. Obviously, you know, they made a huge underground impact, but they never made it to, you know, the status of, say, a Korn or a White Zombie. White Zombie were kind of a part of that whole noise label as well, as they talk about in the interview. So, you know, it's an interesting topic, and I like to make that difference. So, of course, some fans are going to bitch about it and complain about it, and that's cool, whatever. If they don't like it, that's fine, and, you know, it doesn't bother me. They could, you know, speak about it, post something on Facebook. It's not going to hurt my feelings or anything. It's like, you know, that's not going to make me change, you know, what the direction I'm doing, because I know there's enough people that enjoy that kind of thing too. So, you know.
Yep. Well, tell
me. You got to be all inclusive, Chris. It's all about being inclusive.
Yeah, well, because diversity is our strength after all, Bob.
Right. Well, correct. Tell Matt from me that I fucking love that episode. I mean, I really enjoyed it. It was...
Well, good.
What was the guy's name? Tom something.
He'll be the first to listen to this episode.
What was his name? The guy...
Tom Hazelmeyer?
Tom Hazelmeyer, yeah. And I'm not just trying to sell it because Bob's on the line, because if I was doing that, I'd say, listen to the current episode with me and Neely and Bob and Matt. But one episode back is just a Matt episode. And if you pretend to have any interest in the history of rock and heavy metal, it's one of those that you have to listen to. It was so substantially good. And I'm really not trying to kiss anybody's ass here. It just was substantially good in a time that I personally don't know a lot about, even though I was in radio at the time, because it wasn't, yeah. I don't know. I just don't think people paid attention to the history of it at that. In that era, for some reason, the bands were just like, they're here. You know, whether it was Soundgarden or Nine Inch Nails or Pearl Jam or any of them. And there was a history to it that was the Melvins and was Helmet and was, you know, bands like that. And I don't think people you know how, like, you know, we'll always talk about the seven. Everybody's more than willing to talk about, well, Alice Cooper, Zipper Meets Skin, and Deep Purple, which version? At Mach 2, Mach 3, Mach 4. You know, people are always...
Sure.
We've talked our way through the 70s and the 80s, and even going back to the late 60s and early 70s with Zep and Sabbath. We got to the late 80s and into the 90s when everything made its big shift. And for some reason, that history just kind of never materialized like a lot of others. I thought the interview was great. I listened to it twice just because I was like, God damn, there's a lot here.
Yeah, Matt is a smart motherfucker, and he is a true fan. I love people that are real fans, that have the passion, that aren't just followers, but the people that, and I've always, and it's funny because I grew up in Orange County, in Huntington mm-hmm. Beach, which is like the punk rock capital. We're talking, you know, when I was in high school, late 70s into early 80s. I graduated in 82, I think, as did Neely. And so you could probably remember, even in the Midwest, that was when punk was huge, and punk and metal were like oil and water. You know, you did not mix them. And most of my friends were punks because the punks that I knew, most of the metal kids just liked whatever was, you know, I mean, you know, of course we all love Zeppelin and you know, whatever, but it's Zeppelin, you know, Hagar, just the California jam band, Aerosmith or whatever, but I, at that time, I was into the new wave of British heavy metal, getting into Motorhead and Maiden, and you know, that's when the first Maiden album just came out. We're talking 1980, and I was getting into all that shit, Tigers of Pantang, Satsen, and all the European bands that were coming out, and I was hanging out more with the punk rock guys, because a lot of them were familiar, they weren't into the metal bands, but they were kind of familiar with it, because they were also at import stores, and that's where the punks would... They were dedicated, and some of the punk guys were real passionate about that. So we would hang out and go record store shopping. One of the guys I hung out with the most in one record store shopping was this black dude, and we're talking Huntington Beach, 1980, and that was a rarity back then. But he was the coolest guy. He was a jock, a black dude that was into ska, and I was a goofy, nerdy fucking kid, wannabe, you know, like, that was, yeah, metal, you know. I mean, you know, 16, 17 years old at the time, if that. And here he is hanging out with me, and everyone's like, what the fuck is that guy hanging out with Bob for? But we would go record store shopping because I had a jacket with Motorhead and Saxon, and he knew all these bands. I go, how the fuck do you know this shit? He goes, dude, I read Sounds Magazine and Melody Maker. He collected all the British shit back then because he was into... you know, the Specials and all the ska bands at the times, but he wasn't just getting the radio bands. He was going to the stores, buying all the British imports. So, you know, he would see the Motorhead records and all that. I go, you're into that shit? He goes, no, I fucking hate metal, but that's cool that you're into that. And we became kind of buddies just because we both had a similar passion. And like I said, back then you had the rockers hung out here, the punks hung out here, the jocks hung out here. And, you know, you didn't really mix much. And, so, I mean, I love people that have a passion for music, you know, and Matt certainly does. And I think that's awesome. Even though I'm not a big fan of that noise scene, there's a lot of those bands I do like, but I can't say that I'm a huge fan of it. But I told Matt, dude, do your thing, man. I'm trying to encourage him to do more episodes like that, you know. So hopefully we will. And I'm really glad that you said this, and I'm definitely going to have Matt listen to this because... you know, that makes me happy as well.
Oh, I liked it. You know, fuck the haters. I liked it. Do more, because I want to learn more. I just as a metal guy or a rock guy, you know, that just always wants to hear more. It's always cool to hear, you know, even names of band. And I think I've told you this before, Bob. When I watch your documentaries, it's with a notepad. Because I literally write down names of bands that I don't know. And what's fascinating to me is, you know, I think I know a lot about the 80s metal scenes, both the thrash and the, you know, the hair metal and stuff. I think I know a lot more than most people do. And even with that, I'll listen to your or watch your documentaries, and you'll name or you'll interview 15 guys from bands I never heard of before. And I'll be like, or I've heard of them, but I've never heard their music. Like, you turned me on to Snow. You know, I didn't know shit about right. Snow. And then I went and found it and listened to some Snow. I was like, okay, this stuff is good. And, you know, there's for every, I think it's lost on people, but for every Motley Crue, Poison, Warrant, Metallica, Megadeth, you know, pick whatever big band. For every big band of a certain style, there's 50 bands that are equally as good or better that almost nobody heard of. And it's really kind of cool now that you know, podcasts are so prevalent and people are remembering this stuff and trying to bring back where the true roots were. Because now you're really finding out, even these guys that you thought were so cutting edge, maybe they kind of weren't. They were just the ones that got big. You know, they were the ones that just got popular because there was so much of it underground.
Yeah, you know what the interesting thing is, which I think is so funny, and I agree with you 100%. And to be honest, if you didn't live in L.A. during that time, nobody knew. Dude, I talked to Martin Popoff, and you know Martin Popoff. You've had him on the show many times. That dude is literally the encyclopedia of metal. I mean, that guy is like a walking, you know, fucking professor. I call him this professor. And he talks, and his books are I mean, I love his books, but his book, it's like reading a textbook. You know, it's just so, you know, it's so on the money about, he theorizes everything, you know, and he knows about all the bands. He didn't know about half the bands that we featured. So, you know, unless you really lived in, because these were this is before the labels, some of these bands like Snow put out independent records, but they released like 500 or so. I mean, Neely talked about on one of the podcasts, he said when he was in L.A., he got some 7-inch record from some band I had never even heard of that were from L.A., and who knows, they probably pressed a couple hundred records, and nobody outside of that area, you know, has heard of them. And, you know, Lenny made a joke about, you know, Lenny Spickle, that was on the show, his single that he put out with a band called Murder Sweet that he released like 200 singles with, some band out of Connecticut, is going up on eBay for, you know, a couple hundred bucks or something, or $150. So, you know, it's funny hearing that. But I was going to say, the interesting thing is, am I on Rocket Fuel again? Am I just rambling on? But
no, dude, go. Well,
I thought when we did the first Inside Metal, when I was talking to Warren and Joe, and I told him, look, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to direct this, I want to feature all those bands from the early L.A. scene, the Snow, the A La Carte, the Smile, the Greg Leon Invasion, Max Havoc, all those bands, Stormer, all, you know, we'll interview however many people we could get from that era. You know, A La Carte, who were the first live band I saw on Huntington Beach. And they weren't necessarily, they were more hard rock or just rock and roll, but they, you know, these were the bands that played with the Van Halens and all that stuff, and that they were competing with, and they all had just fucking killer guitar players. Exciter with George Lynch. I mean, all these guys came from other bands, you know. Don was in Airborne back then. So, you know, these guys, you know, a lot of people think, oh, these guys are, you know, when the 80s scene hit with Motley and Dokken, they thought that these guys were brand new guys on the scene. But it's like, no, they've been busting their ass for the past 5 to 10 years. Even Motley, you know, of course, Mickey was in London, and Vince, I remember seeing him in this shitty band called Rock Candy, you know, that they covered in the movie. So I said, I want to cover that. And it was, and Warren ended up let me do what I wanted to do. And he had a big fight. Because, of course, being, you know, the executive producer, he wants it to sell. And he's kind of like, dude, nobody's heard of these bands. But, you know, I got the Jack Russells, the Stephen Pierce's, the Lars Ulrich. You know, that was a huge one to get. You know, David Ellison. So I said, look, I've got the major bands, but we got to feature this. And so we put it out, and everyone was saying, dude, nobody's heard of these bands. No one's going to buy this. No one's. That was our biggest movie. And I was thinking, when we were doing L.A. Metal Scene Explode, that was the big era. You know, Wasp, Rat, Great White, you know, all those bands that we interviewed. Motley, we didn't interview Motley, but we interviewed pretty much everyone else from that 80s metal scene, from Armored Saint to even, you know, Death from Odin. And we figured that was going to outsell, you know, what I go, oh, wait till this new one comes out. you know, that one did that well with all these nobody bands. This is going to do. But that movie till today, even Access, you know, that was a big help that they put it on Access TV.
Sure.
I think that was, I would have to check, but I believe that's still our most popular title. The first one, which everyone thought people aren't going to give a shit about because no one knows half the bands in there. So I think people like you have an interest of what was the scene like before MTV came out, before all these LA bands started getting all these record deals and got national or international recognition. Nobody has ever covered that, and that was my point. It's let's do something that hasn't been covered. I don't want to do another Behind the Music, and I purposely wanted to cut it off around 86. That's why I didn't want to feature any of the Guns N' Roses, Poisons, Bastard Pussycats, even LA Guns, any of that stuff. I said, let's, you know, that's been covered. Let's, you know, do the stuff that hasn't been covered. And I'm glad we featured bands like Warrior, you know, Leatherwolf, and all these other bands that were huge on the scene that had, you know, were selling out the clubs, Racer X, but they never had that longevity or never, you know, got, I mean, a lot of them got major record deals, but none of them made it over that hump. So, you know, I'm, you know, even though they're not huge movies, I'm proud of what I've done. I think a lot of people have said that. They say, man, it's really good that you covered that stuff that no one else has covered before. And I think people are going to say this, excuse me, the same about the Bay Area Godfathers. We cover tons of bands that I'm sure a lot of people are going to say the same. I've never heard of these bands. Right. Not just thrash. We wanted to do it outside of thrash. We wanted to cover all the boundaries of the hard rock and metal scene.
Sure.
From bands that were huge during that era.
I can tell you as a kid in the Midwest during that time, you know, if you ask 90% of the country, which would be everybody that was not in L.A., you know, and I'm speaking for me, I was a junkie for music as a teenager. I mean, I bought and stole, more stole than bought, but I had every record that was out and of anything rock or metal, everything. And if you ask me to name the L.A. scene from before your movies, my thought would have been, well, it all started with Van Halen, then Quiet Riot came along, then Motley Crue came along, then, you know, somewhere in there Metallica was found, but the somewhere after Motley Crue, Metallica got big, and that was it. That's the history of LA. You know, that would have been my picture of it. And then after watching your movies, it's like, shit, most of these guys, you know, there were a lot of guys that had bands that were one and done, and people think that they were one-hit wonders, like an Autograph. People think Autograph was a one-hit wonder, and then watching your movie, what's that guy's name?
Wolfgang. Plunkett.
Steve Plunkett,
yeah.
He had what? He had another band that had like almost an eight-year run or something.
Yeah, they were a band that never, again, back in those days, you know, you were talking about before about unsigned bands getting signed. I think it was different back then because radio really supported local music. So, you know, KNAC was around then, but a very small label, and you had K-West and you had KROQ. You know, this is before they were New Wave, but they did a lot of punk, Rodney on the Rock. But even Rodney would throw in a Snow song. A lot of unsigned bands, you know, the Wolfgang and, of course, the Weasels and different stuff like that. So you had that support from the radio. So a lot of these people were familiar with it. And now with the internet, you know, the good and the bad of the internet, the good thing is that people could rediscover a lot of it. You could just go online and, you know, put Snow, you know, Crack the Whip, and boom, it comes right up, or any of these early bands. So you could actually, you know, people like you that have never heard of these bands now have access to a lot of this. Right. So, you know, that has helped a lot. But yeah, Wolfgang were a band that apparently they used to do national tours without a record out. They didn't even have a record. They just had a single. And they were big enough, and they had a whole stage show with Pyro and all that did, big national tours. I mean, another band that, you know, from the Bay Area, obviously you're well aware of, and they put out several records, but long before they did the City's Gonna Burn, Lost Rocket were a huge band locally, but they put like an arena level show. They had the pyro, they did the everything. They were like a big show band. They, you know, you don't see that anymore. You know, bands that really put Slayer, when Slayer first started, they really, you know, put together a killer show. And, you know, and right. this
side of the country, but Overkill as well.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Overkill for sure, definitely.
Yeah, I watched that documentary, that Rat Skates documentary.
That's a great one. Behind the Basement or something about the Basement.
That's an awesome documentary showing those guys with just, you know, banging nails to build stages like literally 10 minutes before they went on and stuff. It's like, God damn.
That's what people did back then, man. Yeah.
Too cool, man. Well, we could talk about this shit forever, but I'd like Neely to be part of this conversation at some point.
Yeah, Neely, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Braverman would say, Chris, are you there? Chris, where's Chris? I think there's some kind of a secret love affair between Braverman and Mr. Aiken.
I'm not aware. He doesn't ask me.
I love what Braverman's on, though. It's like, what the fuck is this guy talking about? What is inside this guy's mind? I mean, this guy's our age, in his 50s, and he still thinks and acts like an 18-year-old kid. I think it's great. I love Braverman. He's just I love characters like that, and to see that there are people still like Braverman that just, you know, could do whatever the fuck he wants, talk the way he wants, and say whatever the fuck he wants. It's like, wow, this is kind of refreshing. Even though I don't understand a goddamn thing he says, it's entertaining.
Well, his references are often very cerebral as well as historic and whatnot. The guy's really smart, so he makes a lot of like historical references. So if you're not, you know, up on your history,
yeah, he's witty. I've
if you're not up on your history, it'll just go right over your head.
Yeah, I noticed he was using that a lot with the previous presidents and some political stuff he was saying, and he's a witty guy for sure.
Well, we all have our specialties, crazy. Don't we, Bob?
Indeed we do, Mr. Neely.
Well, what else you got on the horizon? Anything else we haven't covered?
That's it, man. I think we covered it. Bay Area Godfathers coming out soon. That's the next Inside Metal title. And, you know, we're going to keep the Skull Sessions going. We just put out the episode with Neely and Chris, which, again, I thought that was a fantastic episode. Thanks again for being involved, and we'll definitely get you involved in some future episodes. I think we covered it, man.
Well, just make my performance fee check out to CMS Enterprises LLC, just in case you didn't have that already.
As always, Mr. Neely.
All right, Bob. Well, it's always good to have you on. You're welcome on anytime, as usual.
All right, gentlemen. I hope I didn't bore the listeners to death. But,
even if you did, who gives a shit? Who gives a shit?
Fuck them.
They're probably in the chat room. Z! Get Nell Banjian off, man. He's fucking boring. Get Braverman back, man.
Well, Bob, would you like to pick a song to take us out of this segment?
Do you have any Skin Trade? I was just thinking about them the other day. Swedish band Skin Trade.
Skin Trade.
Are you familiar with them?
I am not familiar with them.
Look on Spotify. You got Spotify, right?
Yep.
Their debut album. Check out the song Freight Train. I know you were going off on different singers the other day about great vocalists. This guy is my absolute favorite vocalist. This album came out in 93, I believe, 92 or 93. It was on Polygram, I think. I don't know if it was even released in the States, but a Swedish band, Skin Trade. Play the song Freight Train, man. The singer, Matte Alfonsetti.
Is it spelled S-K-I-N, Skin, or does it have a Y in it?
No. It's one word, Skin Trade.
Find it, Niels?
Yeah, I got it.
Okay. See if they have a... Yeah, play Freight Train. I had that song in my head the other day, man. Fucking amazing.
Okay.
Amazing band. Cool. That would be awesome.
All right.
All right, motherfuckers. Hail and kill. Fuck you, pal. And hand fucking job.
All right. Perfect. All right. Well, here it is. It's Freight Train exclusively here. What, Bob?
on your classic metal show.
All right, we'll see you.
All right, bye-bye.
How much is $20 million? How about $10 million or even $1 million? If you're like me, that's F-U-N money, as in fun money. It's take 10 trips around the world in a private jet money. It's tell your boss he has bad breath money, or home theater that's better than the real theater money. Ohio Lottery jackpot games like Mega Millions, Powerball, and Classic Lotto all give you a chance at real fun money. So play an Ohio Lottery jackpot game today. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Please play responsibly.